I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm your host, Mike Madison, and I love it when a plan comes together, when a show writes itself for me in the morning. I was out late last night. Knew I had to wake up early this morning. It didn't take long to figure out exactly what we were going to talk about today, so we're about to be off to the races. Today's Thursday. We usually have Americans for Prosperity representative in to talk about what they're up to in the state of the economy, particularly here in Mississippi. They are at the Neshoba County Fair today. We may get a report from the fairgrounds from one of them. If they get some time to do that, they may call in and tell us what's going on. But anyway, we won't have a regular hour, so we got plenty of time to get into the news of the day today. I'll start off today with quotes of the day. These will become very germane to the conversation that we're about to have about what's going on in the world, state of the U.S. economy. These are four quotes here. This first one is from the mental patient Joe Biden's National Economic Council director, Brian Deese. Brian Deese, the National Economic Council director, in March of 2008 said, quote, "Of course, economists have a technical definition of a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth." That's Brian Deese. He starts by saying, "Of course, economists have a technical definition of a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth." The next quote of the day comes from the old geezer, Biden's chair of the White House Economic chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Her name is Cecilia Rouse. In May of this year, she said, quote, "Two quarters of negative growth," unquote, "is an indicator of a recession." We have another quote here. This is from Joe Biden's economic advisor, Jared Bernstein. In September of 2019, he said a recession is, quote, "defined as two consecutive quarters of declining growth," unquote. And our final quote of the day here is Biden's economic advisor, Heather Boucher, who in May 20 of 19 said, as a, quote, "rule of thumb," unquote, "a recession refers to," quote, "two quarters of negative growth in GDP." So, with those prescient, factually based quotes of the day in mind, let's get on to the news of the day. Turns out, we got a negative 0.9 GDP growth. I don't know if it comes off as callous. This recession is going to hurt a lot of people. They always do. My laughing is not at the state that we are in. It is anything but funny. But I laugh in reaction to last week I covered this story. And if I had a staff here, you know, a lot of people out there really admire Tucker Carlson. I do too. He goes where others will not go. I think he's got a very well done show. He hits on some great points. I don't agree with him on everything, but a great deal of stuff. He's definitely one of the most entertaining and informative people on television. He also has a staff of probably 20 people doing his research for him. I can't imagine the power you could have of production of a show with that kind of staff, because I would like to have somebody go back and just find my segment from last week where I really scratched my head at this, and I just clipped my notes and copied and pasted them to today's show. So this last week I had this, this is what I noted this with. Truly bizarre is what I wrote above this next Bloomberg article. The truly bizarre is what I was thinking, because I thought this was truly bizarre. This was a Bloomberg that came out last week. Odds are now close to even that the U.S. economy will slip into a recession within the next year. Again, this was last week. As persistent and rapid inflation emboldens the Federal Reserve to pursue larger interest rate hikes, the probability of a downturn over the next 12 months stands at 47.5%, up sharply from 30% odds in June, according to the latest Bloomberg monthly survey of economists. In March, those odds were at 20%. The latest survey was conducted July 8th through 14th, with 34 economists responding about the chances of a recession. So let me just summarize this. They surveyed 34 economists, and they said, well, there's less than a 0.5% chance that we may be in a recession possibly within the next 12 months. And the reason I titled that Truly Bizarre is because I realized, no, we are already in a recession. At the time they said this, we were already 6 months into a recession, a current recession. How does Mike Madison, out in Flora, Mississippi, no economics training, as a matter of fact, I was extremely bored by economics back in college. What a missed opportunity had I been a seeker of knowledge back then, the things I could have done. But how is it that I can understand this and other people can understand? We're 6 months into a recession, but you've got 34 economists that Bloomberg looks up and they say, yeah, we think there's less than half a chance that we might be in one in the next 12 months while we're sitting smack dab 6 months into a recession. Anyway, it's official now. The negative 0.9 GDP print means that we have now had two consecutive quarters of negative growth. As I just read the long list of Biden's economic advisors who defined a recession exactly as that, two quarters of negative growth, you would think that means it's official, right? Well, not in today's world, where facts and truth are completely malleable. This was the really horrific White House spokeshole, fielding some questions, of course, from Peter Ducey. He may be the only guy that asked tough questions there.
If things are going so great, though, then why is it that White House officials are trying to redefine recession?
No, we're not redefining recession.
If we all understand a recession to be two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth in a row, and then you have White House officials come up here to say, no, that's not what a recession is. It's something else. How is that not redefining recession?
Because that's not the definition.
Yeah. I just read you Biden's own economic team, four separate quotes from 2008 up into May of this year. Four of its economic advisors defined a recession exactly as two quarters of negative growth, and that has been accepted since, I believe, 1955.
That is not the definition.
Reinke said in 2008, of course, economists have a technical definition, which is of a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth.
I can tell you this.
They said two negative quarters of GDP growth is not the technical definition of a recession.
It is not. It is not.
Why did he say that?
It is not.
Of course, he said it was. It's just, he says it's not. This is Brian Deese. He is one of the guys shepherding this ship. Now, I will point this out, and I'm going to talk a little bit today about my uncomfortable, not uncomfortable for me. I live very well within my own skin because I'm extremely consistent. Most people, that makes them uncomfortable. They don't like consistency. I am wildly consistent on this show. And this is Brian Deese. And the reason I say that is because all White House economic advisors are hacks and stooges designed to manipulate the mind of the American citizen to accept what you're given that gives more power and profit to the powerful, while the American standard of living goes down the drain. This is Republican and Democrat. White House economic advisors tell their constituents what they want to hear, but not ever the truth. So Brian Deese is just one of the most horrible in a cavalcade of horrible economic advisors whose job is to lie to the American people as they back up the truck and loot the place. This is Brian Deese yesterday.
Two negative quarters of GDP growth is not the technical definition of recession. It's not the definition that economists have traditionally relied on.
And this is done masterfully in a tweet, juxtaposed right next to it in two panels. That's his quote, and that's him standing in front of the White House seal, right next to a quote that he gave not long ago, where he said, Economists have a technical definition of a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. I love the internet. You would think, you would really think that the internet would up the amount of accountability for people, right? We've got some quotes. I don't know if I get to them today. Some interviews, some what he said then, what he said now about Anthony Fauci. You would think you could use the accountability of the internet. You understand that it is not that long ago, and if you're a young American, you don't know this. But there was a time not long ago, 20 years ago, where you would have to think to yourself, golly, I think that guy might have said something to the contrary, 10 years ago. But what, you'd have to go to the library and try to find archives of a newspaper? There was no internet. There was no YouTube clipping endlessly this stuff. You would just have to kind of go, I swear he said something different a while back. Now you can go to the internet immediately. It takes about 30 seconds to find something, or in YouTube or anything like this, and you can hear these people saying one thing and then saying the exact opposite. And you would think they would be a little more circumspect in just lying to our faces now and pretending that they never said the first thing. Anthony Fauci has just come out and said, I never advocated for lockdowns. And the brilliant people who know how to use the internet went and found the clip where he said, I recommended lockdowns to the government. You would think Anthony Fauci would be conscious of that idea. Oh my, I can't go out and say I didn't call for lockdowns, because they're going to use a clip showing me saying exactly that I did advocate for lockdowns. You would think accountability would be easy to implement to these people, but they just don't care. And the American people don't care. I mean, basically the American motto is just lie to me. Make me feel good. I don't care if it's based in fact. I don't care what you said before. Say what makes me feel good now. Now, the other party, doesn't matter which side of the aisle it happens on, the other party will try to hold somebody accountable, but they never do, because they only preach to the people that don't vote for those people anyway. This continued on, this Orwellian twisting of what we're going through right now, trying to deny it's a recession, and it's everywhere. I've got some amazing headlines here. Let's get to this last clip. I hadn't even played it. This is CNN. I love the screenshot here. It's one of these White House officials. I don't know who it is, but he's mopping the sweat off his forehead in this still image as the CNN commentator talks to him. CNN, who has to carry water for this White House. I can't imagine how nasty they feel. They must have a shower about every 10 feet in CNN. If they have any human dignity there whatsoever, they must need to take constant showers over at CNN.
I mean, it's been very clear. The president, your whole team has been pushing back aggressively on if the country is in a recession, and how worried the country should be about entering a recession in light of this. The New York Times put it this way today. To paraphrase an old political adage, if you're explaining how recession calls are made, you're losing. Do you see that, Jared?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think we've gotten into a technical discussion about what constitutes a recession. And I think, look, bringing the facts to the table is something that we as economic advisors have to do.
No, we're just having a discussion. We are just trying to pretend. And the thing is that the American experience right now is not good. Now, you can look at a mask, right? Even to myself intuitively. I mean, I had to do a little bit of research. The masking seemed weird to me. Force masking is a no-go to me. I'm a libertarian. You don't get to tell me what I wear during the course of a day, particularly in medical intervention. But there's a little bit of something there that people could go, well, some kind of a barrier across my mouth and nose during a time of, a transmissible disease. You might think there's a little something that people can kind of grab onto, right? Or they might just kind of ignore the fact that masks don't work and that every chart shows you that mask mandates were a colossal failure and made the situation worse, and that the science shows how unhealthy they are and how ineffective they are. But just the visual representation of that mask for a lot of people, that's really enough for them. They think, well, it looks like, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You're blocking something, I'm sure, you know. But with this economic stuff, Americans are stewing. They are stewing in this inflation. Their wages are not keeping up with their cost of living. They are racking up massive credit card debt. They are spending their savings, savings they've been getting no return on for now decades. The American people, they know that this is BS. They just know it. They're living it. But it will not stop them from trying to lie about it.
To follow up on the economy, is it a risk for President Biden to say that he does not think the United States is going to be in a recession? And does the White House have any concerns that it will look misguided if the U.S. does enter a recession?
So their second part is, you know, speculation right now. And if your the answer to your first part is no.
No. It's speculation. We don't know if we're in a recession. We're in a recession. We've been in one for 6 months now. I think that's the other thing that people don't understand. You know, now we've met the technical definition of a recession. It means that we've had two quarters of negative growth, which means that the recession started at the beginning of this year or the end of last year. We're already 6 months in. We are already 6 months in. This is why I just have been so amazed and headlined, truly bizarre, a bunch of economists that were going, I don't know, maybe less than half a chance that we're going to be one maybe in the next 12 months. It's just truly bizarre to me. We're living it right now. We're in it. But that is not stopping the media. I've got a couple of stories. One from Market Watch, a headline, and then a story from Washington Post. I've mentioned it before. I would really like to. I probably need to do this. Lovely internet can probably provide me this information. I'd like to go back and read Pravda in the Soviet Union as they were losing the Cold War and the Soviet Union's economy was collapsing. I've got to get a hold of an English translation of Pravda in 1988, 1989, before the collapse. Now, I'm not saying we're about to go into a Soviet-style complete collapse here, but what I am saying is I'd love to see how the Soviet Union, with their Pravda propagandist newspapers, how they reported on things as the Soviet citizens were suffering, starving. The big joke was, you know, you order a dishwasher and they tell you, well, we'll deliver that to you in 5 years. And the guy goes, are you going to deliver it in the morning or the afternoon? And the salesman goes, well, what difference does that make? It's in 5 years. He goes, because I just ordered a refrigerator, too. He's got to schedule them because they're both 5 years. I mean, the Soviet citizen was living this. I would love to see what Pravda did, because I guarantee you the Washington Post and Market Watch are jockeying for the position of greater propagandist than Pravda. I'll do these headlines and stories when we come back. Stick around. You know, I was just thinking during the break, we are juggling a lot of really big lies right now. There's always a bunch of lies. When the government opens its mouth, George Carlin was prescient and right. He says there's one rule that he lives by. Anything that the government tells him, he doesn't believe. The government always lies. But we have got some real whoppers out there right now, don't we? Vaccines are safe and effective, and they work. Our government and many people in the medical mafia, and I'm going to get more to them later today, too. Wait till you hear the statistics on Great Britain's people who are dying from COVID over there. So we're dealing with those. Ukraine is a bastion of democracy. The little guy minding their own business doing nothing, and Russia unprovoked attacked Ukraine. We're not in a recession. Everything's going great. As a matter of fact, these negative GDP numbers, according to the White House, are signs of a good economy. I mean, I would probably have to sit down and really, white supremacy is the greatest threat facing the United States right now. I mean, we have got some big lies out there that are the mainstream narratives of our federal government and our mainstream media. These are big, whopping lies. I guess, you know, was it Hitler or Goebbels or one of these people who basically said tell a lie, you know, big enough and often enough that it's almost more effective to tell a really huge lie? But it seems to me that these things are getting so bad that more and more Americans have got to be saying to themselves, what the hell is going on here? Men are not women. Look at that Leah Thompson swimming against these poor girls who've been practicing, been out at the swimming pool at 6 o'clock in the morning their entire lives, practicing to go to some meet, and there's some dude, some 6'4" dude, jumps in and beats them and takes the medal. I mean, we are dealing with some just whopper lies out there right now. People have got to see through this stuff. Of course, the more subtle lies, those are more difficult. But these are biggies. Here is the chairman of the Federal Reserve just yesterday when they announced their rate hike.
I do not think the U.S. is currently in a recession. And the reason is there are just too many areas of the economy that are performing, you know, too well. And of course, I would point to the labor market in particular. As I mentioned, it's true that growth is slowing, and for reasons that we understand. Really, the growth was extraordinarily high last year, 5.5%. We would have expected growth to slow. There's also more slowing going on now. But if you look at the labor market, you've got growth, I think, payroll jobs averaging 450,000 per month.
Now, we talked about this when the jobs report came out. What's accounting for all these new jobs? It's people taking second and third jobs to try to keep their head above water. To the policymakers, to the people in the Ivory Castle, to the people at the Eccles Building, that's the Federal Reserve Building, the place that you protesters should be going to when you go to Washington, D.C. To the people in the Eccles Building, they don't know this. They don't understand people having to go out and take on extra jobs to keep their heads above water. I don't even think they can comprehend that. They've never lived that life.
That's a remarkably strong level for this state of affairs. The unemployment rate at near a 50-year low at 3.6%.
Typically before every recession, unemployment is always low. Of course, we also know there's that inconvenient fact that these numbers are completely juiced, that they do seasonal adjustments and they do all kinds of different things. You know, it was one of the things that attracted me to Donald Trump in 2016, back when he was honest and he said, look, all these numbers are manipulated to try to make the president look good. Of course, within his first month of office, Sean Spicer came out and said, well, they were fake numbers, but they're real now. He supposedly in 30 days, Donald Trump had flipped the entire economic world on his head and everything that was a lie under Obama became truth under Donald Trump. It was one of my big uh-oh moments. But the labor force participation rate is an important chart that most people don't understand. Look. These are the people setting economic policy. They're setting your tax rates. They're setting spending priorities in Washington, D.C. Take from the money that they steal from you. They make decisions. I mean, these people are incredibly powerful. And I did a show the other day where I titled it something like Wrong, Wronger, and Wrongest. I mean, the speck, this little tiny cabal of people in Washington, D.C., who somehow control the lives of 330 million Americans, they're just lying to you. They are just flat out lying to you. So there's your Federal Reserve chief. Now, I just want to remind everybody, there is only one political party that has called for decades and used the slogan, end the Fed. This has been lost on normie Republicans, Democrats who want the welfare state funded and they don't care about debt. And we know the Democrats love to spend money, but so do the Republicans. The Republicans love to spend money. They love Medicare Part D, the biggest entitlement since LBJ. They love the warfare state. Both political parties love it. So there's one political party, and that's the Libertarian Party, that has been saying, end the Fed. This is going to become popular because they will write books in the future about what we're about to go through and how the Federal Reserve caused it. Now, it would be great if the American people got out in front of that and understood it now, before we had to go through hell. But they won't. Because most people are trapped in that political stuff. You want to see this through a political lens. You want this to be Bidenflation. You want this to be Biden's economy. If you still think that this is Joe Biden's, and everything Joe Biden's done has made this worse. I think maybe every single thing. There may be some outlier out there where he did something that was maybe not noticed, that didn't make things worse, didn't make anything better. Joe Biden's a disaster. His entire administration, whoever's running him, is a disaster. It does feel that they're purposely trying to destroy the United States. But if you think it's just Joe Biden that created this, here's a headline. EU, that's the European Union, consumer confidence crashes to record low as German CPI, that's their inflation, unexpectedly reaccelerates. Somebody's going to need to explain to me how Joe Biden caused inflation in Germany and caused the European Union's confidence to crash. You see, you understand, the common denominator between us and Germany and the European Union is not Joe Biden. That nut job's only got control here. The common denominator is central banking. You've got the ECB. That's the European Central Bank. You've got central banks in countries like Germany. You've got a central bank here called the Federal Reserve. That's the common denominator. It's not Joe Biden. Joe Biden will make it worse. I'm sure the president of Germany will make it worse. The European Commission will make it worse, because that's what they do. But this is a central banking issue. As I said, there will be books written about this. Libertarians wrote the book 30 years ago, and people have decided to ignore them. I'm going to get to these stories, this MarketWatch headline, and this story from WaPo. Truly amazing stuff. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking, I told you weeks and weeks ago, this is going to be a show about economics. Hopefully that's entertaining to people. Hopefully it learns something or think about things in different ways. But this is an important time in American history, largely for economic reasons. Culture war, all these other things that are going on. I know it's exhausting, but the economics is what affects each and every one of us on a daily basis. It seems like the most important thing to me. It's why I tell you the Federal Reserve needs to be understood. It is the Death Star, the nexus of all of our problems. When it comes to financial issues, I do like to have a little bit of fun, though. And somebody pointed out, anytime I get a chance to bash Jim Cramer on CNBC, I like to do it, particularly after he said that the Army should come and hold us all down and jab that shot into our arm. Yeah, that pretty much meant Jim Cramer's fair game on this show. He's been horrific for years and years, but that really kind of made me pay some special attention to him. Coinbase is one of these places that sells Bitcoin. It's like having a bank account. You can put your cryptocurrencies in. A year ago, Jim Cramer tweeted this out. You know, he's built his following on people taking his stock picks. And I have told you, his record is just abysmal. It's almost like he's purposefully trying to make Americans lose money. But he's real loud, and Americans like to be sold something. A year ago, he tweeted this out. We like Coinbase to $475 a share. That was a year ago. Yesterday, or day before yesterday, he tweeted out, I've been waiting for this SEC investigation of Coinbase to happen for ages. Now here we go. You can't just do what you want with securities in this country. Coinbase is now under some SEC investigation. Now, so a year ago, he liked Coinbase to be $475 a share. Now he's telling you, oh, I've been telling you they need to be investigated by the SEC. Just for giggles, almost used the full term there, FCC non-compliant. Just for giggles here, we'll see. What is the share price? Jim Cramer told you a year ago he likes it at $475 a share. What's the share price of Coinbase right now? Anyone? Anyone? $58 a share. Quite the financial advisor there on CNBC. Here's the Market Watch. I told you, Pravda. I want to go back and take a look at Pravda. Soviet Union Pravda newspapers from 1988-1989, preceding the collapse of the Soviet Union, just to see how they tried to convince their citizens, pay no attention to what's happening in your own life. Everything's going great. I remember being back in the 1980s and just laughing at those silly Soviets who just couldn't see through the propaganda of their communist government. Now I understand it. I walk among people who believe this crap. Here is the headline from MarketWatch. U.S. economy invites talk of a recession as GDP shows contraction in the second quarter. We're inviting, you know, maybe it's time we have just a conversation that, you know, maybe someday in the future things aren't going to go great. U.S. economy invites talk of a recession. No, we're 6 months into one. But nothing is better than this. This was in the Washington Post. The eight economists who decide if the U.S. is in a recession. The story says, even if gross domestic product figures show a shrinking economy, a recession won't officially have begun unless the National Bureau of Economic Research says so. The political haggling is not supposed to matter to the eight economists who rule on when recessions start. Their decision is almost certainly months away, if it comes at all. The committee typically waits long after recession has begun to declare it, only acting when the evidence has become overwhelming, sometimes even after the recession is already over. That puts the pressure bearing down on the organization from the outside to promptly render a verdict on one of the most important matters facing economic policymakers, directly at odds with its mission to provide unassailable empirical decisions. You hear this? It's not a recession. We've got to wait. I guess this is like choosing the Pope. They'll put up a puff of white smoke to let you know in 6 to 12 months whether or not we've been in a recession since January of 2022. As a result, what seems like a straightforward question, is the U.S. economy in a recession, is in part decided on a subjective basis at a later date, sometimes when it no longer appears pertinent, by experts in closed-door meetings of a privately selected committee. I'm telling you, there's something Soviet about that. The committee. What do they call those back then? I don't know. Anyway. So we've got to wait for the eight guys. Don't believe your lying eyes. Don't believe the two quarters of negative growth. Don't pay attention to the labor force participation. Don't pay attention to trying to make it to the end of every month. Just sit around and wait. There's eight guys in a closed-door meeting at a privately selected area. They're going to get around to it, and they'll let you know sometime next year if we were ever in a recession. I mean, and, you know, I mentioned I'm unusually consistent on this stuff. And I remember having an argument with a Democrat back in 2001. This was back when I was a Kool-Aid-drinking Republican, George Bush, Dick Cheney supporter. Ugh, speaking of showers, I may need to go take one after this segment. Yes, I had a Cheney bumper sticker on my car. Holy crap, how stupid was I? But I remember having a conversation with a Democrat. I can remember where I was. The parking lot I was in, talking to this Democrat about the economy back in 2001, and he was saying this was the Bush recession. And even at the time, now, I probably was trying to take up for Bush a little bit because I was a Kool-Aid-drinking, neocon, warmongering Bushite. But I was just kind of pointing out what I thought was painfully obvious. I said, you know, this dot-com bubble grew under Bill Clinton. I mean, everybody knew we were in a bubble in 2000. This was Bill Clinton's last year. We knew this was unsustainable. I mean, in hindsight, anybody can look at the stock charts and the economic charts and see the hype around dot-com and see, of course, it was going to crash. The fact that George Bush got into office as this was crashing does not mean it was a George Bush recession. And he couldn't get that because he was at the time a Kool-Aid-drinking Democrat, and his job was to blame George Bush for everything bad that was happening. Then in 2008-2009, when Obama inherited a bursting bubble. Now, at this point, I wasn't a Kool-Aid-drinking Republican, and I could see that the housing bubble that was created under George W. Bush was popping and popped really before Bush even left. This is a little different because with the 2001 recession, it really kind of started on George W. Bush's watch, even though it was a consequence of what had happened during the Clinton years. But it gave ammunition to the Democrats to blame George Bush. Hey, look, under Clinton, you'll still hear these things. People still believe this stuff. Under Clinton, we had this great booming economy, and then Bush came in and wrecked it all. No, what you had during the Clinton years was a bubble, an artificially inflated bubble based around this new technology of the internet. And it crashed, like it always does, when the Federal Reserve does what it does and creates the boom and bust cycle. So in 2008, 2009, I wasn't a Kool-Aid drinking Republican, and I could see that even though Barack Obama, I was fully confident that he was going to make everything worse, and he did in spades. But I knew that it was the excesses of the Bush years, the endless money printing that went on during the Bush years, the low interest rates that led to the housing bubble in the first place during the Bush years. This was not Obama didn't step into office and create this mess. Again, he made it worse. And now I'm looking at a situation where we've got the exact same thing again. And I know I am uncomfortably, for many people, uncomfortably consistent. Because the Republican Kool-Aid drinkers will now say this is entirely Biden's recession. Now, it is his now. He's going to own this thing politically because people aren't smart. And Joe Biden is so bad that it just feels right to just dump this in his lap. And he's going to make it significantly worse. He and the Democrats are going to make this significantly worse. And if there's a red wave in the midterms, Republicans may do some things that make it a little bit better. Not a lot, but a little. But I am, again, unusually consistent. And I can see that it was the Trump extension of the bubble during his term that created this. I'm going to play the clip. I played it a couple of days ago, I think on Tuesday. See, I understand this is a bubble bursting. This is not one deranged mental patient sitting behind a desk with his weird doll eyes these days. Have they got a body double in for this guy now? Did he die? But this is Donald Trump back in 2018, and I'm gonna translate what Trump said at the time.
What should the Fed do with interest rates?
Well, I personally think the Fed should drop rates. I think they really slowed us down. There's no inflation. I would say in terms of quantitative tightening, it should actually now be quantitative easing. Very little, if any, inflation. And I think they should drop rates. And they should get rid of quantitative tightening. You would see a rocket ship.
So what he's saying is they should start printing more money. That's what Donald Trump was saying there. This is, to me, what he's basically saying is he's driving down the road, drinking alcohol, and he turns to everybody and goes, we should have another drink. We haven't gotten a DUI yet. That's essentially the same thing. Essentially what Donald Trump was saying, there's no inflation now. Now, what he proposed created the inflation that you're seeing today. I know this is hard for a lot of people to swallow, but it's true. And what Barack Obama did for 8 years created the inflation that you're seeing right now and the bubble that has led to the popping that we're seeing right now. The economic catastrophe that is going to befall us is going to be laid at the feet of Barack Obama and Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Now, people can't see this because they all want money to spend from the Fed. But Donald Trump saying back in 2018, there's no inflation. We can just keep printing money. That is the same thing as saying, look, I know I'm drunk driving this car, but I can have more alcohol because I haven't gotten a DUI yet. You don't print $1 trillion and have inflation the next day. If the feedback loop was that short, we might catch a clue. It is excesses of years and years. The housing market didn't just pop one day. It wasn't you went out one day and you went, wow, housing prices went up 10%. Boom, crash. No, we had years and years of this housing boom facilitated by easy money policies. And then it built up ahead of steam, got to an unsustainable level and popped. It takes a while. Could Donald Trump not see this in 2018? Now, of course he could, but he had tied his entire presidency to the stock market, and he knew to keep the stock market bubble inflated to make himself look good, he needed them to print more money. Take more interest rates down to zero or less, as he said, negative interest rates. Do you think inflation's bad now? If Donald Trump had had his way and they'd gone into negative interest rates, oh, inflation would be even worse than it is right now. As I say, I know I'm uncomfortably consistent in these things, being able to see that all of these presidents are responsible. But just like it wasn't George Bush's fault for the Clinton bubble, it wasn't Barack Obama's fault for the George Bush bubble, it's not necessarily Joe Biden's fault for the Trump and Obama bubble. That bubble was a big one. It took them about 12 years to really blow this one sky high. And Joe Biden will make it worse. There's absolutely no doubt about it. He will create his own catastrophes. There's, I have no reservation saying that. I just wish people would understand these things. I'll be right back.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, we've only got about a minute in this hour to go. Next hour, we may hear from Americans for Prosperity. They are boots on the ground in Neshoba County Fair, doing what they do and lobby on behalf of free markets here in Mississippi, which we desperately need. We're going to need them even more coming up soon. Americans for Prosperity might want to get on board with these people. I'm also going to talk about, I was listening to Dennis Prager last night, and it's just interesting. He made some very good points. He's become disillusioned with the medical system. And I'll tell you why he's disillusioned. And I'm happy to have the company. Don't get me wrong. It's just I find the way we drive that we draw these lines on when we decide to become fed up with something are interesting to me. They seem a bit late, I'll say. You know, this is with politicians or anybody else. We give them a long, long, long leash, and then they finally cross that line. They've done so much damage already. We're waiting too late to draw red lines for these institutions, so we'll talk about that when we get back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB.
Right into this world, all alone, God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show. I am your host, Mike Madison. Thanks for joining me. Americans for Prosperity is usually occupying this hour. They are up at Neshoba County Fair, pressing the flesh, trying to set us free economically here in the state of Mississippi, and their job has never been more important than it will be in the coming years. We do not have, you know, for a majority red, supermajority red state with a bunch of Republicans who talk about how great they are for our freedoms, we do not have an economically free state here. Americans for Prosperity is trying to change that by any means possible, and they're up there kind of working the system right now up at the Neshoba County Fair. They may call in later, tell us what's going on up there. I got to tell you, I'm kind of enjoying being here in the air conditioning right now. But anyway, I wanted to get to this Dennis Prager thing I heard him talking about last night. I just thought it was interesting, but there was a headline I saw yesterday. It said there's a survey, 1 in 5 don't want to have children. I'm actually kind of surprised. I thought that number might be higher with the generations that are growing up now. You know, we were seeing an erosion of the family. It's not good. This is not good for a long-term society. Now, anybody who's ever had kids, you can get it. I've got some friends who never had children. The money they have, the free time they have, you know, depending on the day that you catch a parent, you know, someone who never had children, you may either get sympathy from, oh, it's a shame you never had kids, or they may, oh, good for you. It just depends on how your kids are behaving or what bills you're paying that day. But, you know, at first I thought, you know, this is terrible for a country in the long term if people don't have children, because one of the only reasons that I really even care very much about what's going on is because of my kids. For me, having children gives you, when you look at the state of our country, it gives me long-term thinking. If I'm going through this solo or with somebody else my own age, then really running out the clock's about all you really need to worry about, right? Keep my 401k up, keep my house value up for just a little bit longer. Let me cash out. Let me enjoy my retirement. And then, whatever happens, happens. That's a very selfish, narcissistic view. But if you don't have offspring, you know, your concerns mostly are for yourself at the time. Nobody wants to go through economic hardship. It is because I have children that I want to see a deep, dark recession that I know we need to have, a cleansing of the system so that it's not, we don't leave this mess for them. And so when I saw this survey, I thought, well, this could really kind of make people even more short-term thinkers by not having children that they care about, you know, the future of this country for. But I really kind of stopped myself in that thought and went, people don't care now. People who have children right now don't care, Republican and Democrat. If any of us have voted for Thad Cochran, Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Michael Guest, Greg Harper, name the politician that has gone to Washington, D.C. and has economically destroyed this country, then you participate. You didn't care either. You cared more about a win for your tribe and for going along, not seeming, you know, like a troublemaker. We just saw the re-election of Michael Guest. He will sign massive spending bills. He's fine sending $50 billion over to Ukraine. Because we just want team sports. Nobody pays attention to this stuff. You're going to start paying attention now. My show might begin to shine. Because of the stuff that I've been warning about for 5 years on this air and 10 years prior to that. Because I was warned about it. I'm not some genius. I had to learn these things from other people. And so maybe people will start to care. We are leaving a mess for our children, and it is one of the most irresponsible crimes against future generations I've ever seen. You know, our founding fathers said it is incumbent upon every generation to pay their bills and not leave them for the next generation. And I see conservatives. I see conservatives and so-called constitutionalists who prattle endlessly about the founding fathers and how brave they were and how great. You know, I love July 4th, Independence Day. We showed those Brits. And then you ignore their words. You know, having children should make us very circumspect in what other people are doing that will affect them down the road. But most people don't even give a crap. And you're going to see, my kids are 21 years old. I want this to happen now. I want us to have the difficulties now while they're young and nimble and without children. I don't want them getting to be 35, 40 years old, a couple of kids, a job, and then have the rug pulled out from underneath them because of my generation's malfeasance, what I supported. Luckily for myself, I can sleep well at night. Number one, I speak out against this, regardless of party, because I don't belong to a tribe. I can call Donald Trump out for his trillion-dollar deficits, just like I'll call Joe Biden out for him. Again, I'm uncomfortably consistent. But I can sleep well at night knowing that I haven't participated in this. I'm not responsible for this. I have talked against it, voted against it at every possible term, except for that one dang vote in 2016 where Trump duped me into thinking he was going to go make some level of difference to us in the future. Instead, he called for negative interest rates and signed trillion-dollar deficits, not even including 2020, when we really went to town. But, you know, it's concerning to me that people aren't going to reproduce. Of course, I also understand this. If you're a young adult and you're looking out at the economic landscape right now, you're trying to keep your own head above water. I waited to have kids. I was waiting till I was financially secure. That day almost never comes to any young adult while you can still procreate. Eventually you just go, well, this may be as good as it gets. Let's go ahead and do this. And it works out. It's great. Having kids is great. It's pain in the, a lot of sacrifices. It's a pain in the butt a lot of times, but it is great. I love my children. Love watching them grow up. It's a very rewarding thing. Thank God I didn't have bad kids. I got to tell you that. All the sacrifices you make, all the money that it costs, a bad kid, boy, that's got to be very taxing. I ended up with a couple of very good kids. But anyway, at first I saw this headline, people not having kids. I thought, well, that's going to shorten up our, you know, our thinking about let's just get whatever we can right now because soon we'll all be dead and without children to care about. But the fact of the matter is most people don't care about what happens to our children now anyway. It's maybe not, maybe that's too judgy. Maybe a lot of people do care, but they've bought into this. They bought into this propaganda that we can never fail. We're America. We've got the dollar reserve currency. We're always the greatest. It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I hate to keep going to this. I know it's not popular. But when Donald Trump can tell you, pay attention to the stock market and the economic activity, don't pay attention to all the debt that we're racking up to get there. Maybe people just buy into that. They only look at the one side of the ledger that says, look at all this prosperity, greatest economy in the history of the world. Really? Then why did we have to borrow? Why do we have to borrow $8 trillion during your term to make that? I mean, I know people who are prosperous and really killing it, that they're not going into debt to do it. They're they're actually paying off debt when they're successful. How come during that term we had to borrow so much money to be prosperous? That seems like a, I don't know, a fake prosperity to me. And so maybe more people just buy into this idea that Republicans will fix it. I care about my children, Mike. I vote Republican. Well, I don't know if you've noticed. I don't know if you've noticed, and I hope there's a red wave in the midterms because the Democrats have lost their mind. But you may find out that voting for the R's is not what's going to secure the financial picture, the landscape of this country for our kids, because Republicans have gone right down this path of endless debt, and we're about to pay the price for it. So anyway, when I get back, I want to talk about this Dennis Prager thing. We're going to get into some medical stuff. Wait till you hear the statistics on COVID deaths in Great Britain. Again, we have to go across overseas to get any real numbers. And here in this country, it is still, it's interesting. We talked the other day about the progression that they've made on these shots. I actually took all the clips and put them together. It took a while. You know, starting out with Joe Biden saying, if you get this shot, you won't get the disease, all the way down to where now it is. Well, it'll still keep you from being hospitalized or die. Right now, they said there's not going to be a recession. Now that we're in a recession, they say, well, we're not declaring this a recession, but it's trending that way. And now the newest thing is, well, we could have a recession, but it will be brief and shallow. This is the exact same progression of just trying to keep the American people on the couch, basically. Because if they told you the truth of what's going to happen, just like if they told you the truth about these shots, people would be in the streets. I'll be right back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
So I was listening to Dennis Prager last night right here on 103.9 WYAB. He does a show is here, broadcast here late night. Dennis Prager, very smart guy. He's almost exclusively, attacks the left justifiably in basically every area. I do not agree with Dennis Prager on everything. I'm a weirdo. My brain is different than others, but very, very smart guy. And I listen to his show whenever I'm out. At night, but it was interesting. Last night he was talking about how he had become so disillusioned with doctors in the medical field because they're going woke. A lot of stories out there. I've brought them to you here. You know, a big mantra of this show is escape the medical system. I make no bones about that. I've been doing my health segment, railing against Western medicine and the disease care industry we've created here for profit. But he's disillusioned at them because they have gone woke. And there's lots of stories about medical schools. Now they've got inclusivity and equity trainings. I saw a story yesterday. I don't have it clipped. It was like the American College of Breastfeeding People's whatever it was. And they've redefined terms to things like they've got father's milk now in their thing. You know, they're going woke, chest feeding people. They're making these parts of policy. And Dennis Prager was rightfully pointing out the insanity of that. But here's the interesting thing. And I do feel the need to kind of explain myself sometimes because, you know, a lot of people travel to other countries. They want to experience other cultures. And I understand as a libertarian in central Mississippi, it's almost like seeing someone from another country. You know, I mean, I think so differently from a lot of people. I want people to kind of understand where I'm coming from. And so I heard Dennis Prager talk about this, and I thought, well, I'm absolutely with him. I've done those stories myself to watch, you know, what is supposed to be a scientific field of medicine be co-opted by this wokeness is bizarre, and it's dangerous. This is why I am the Harriet Tubman of trying to lead you out of the medical system. I'm running the Underground Railroad to Health, if anybody will join me. You're going to want to, particularly when these woke doctors, they're already out there. But here's what's interesting to me now is, you know, a lot of conservatives woke up to some of the weirdness in Western medicine, the American medical situation during COVID, right? Suddenly you saw doctors that in 2019 would have scoffed at wearing a mask for a viral respiratory disease. suddenly tell everybody you got to wear a mask to do your party, you're going to kill your grandma. We saw doctors doing all kinds of strange things, buying into these really weird things and become very authoritarian. I mean, we saw UMC constantly have a parade of doctors telling you, you need to stay home. You need to lock down. You need to close your schools. You don't need to go to church. You need. And we're just like, what is this based on? I mean, particularly those of us who were watching Sweden as they were just going on with their lives and they were having better outcomes than us. So a lot of people have started questioning the medical establishment during COVID. Dennis Prager now is disillusioned with this, air quotes here in the studio, fine profession. Let me qualify this as I always do. There's some fantastic doctors out there, fantastic nurses, people who really care, people who want to see you healthy and happy. It's just that's just not the system because that's not profitable. You have to find that doctor. It's like a mechanic. You got to find a good mechanic, and they're invaluable. If you can find a good doctor, I recommend you go over to Integrative Medical and Wellness in Ridgeland, right there off Draperton Drive, IMAWC.com, IMAWC.com. They're integrative health. They look for the cause of your disease, not just treating symptoms with endless streams of pharmaceuticals. But there are good doctors, good nurses, good people out there. But the system itself stinks. I've been talking about it since the day I came on air here. And here's the interesting thing. Now people look at the at what's going on with the medical establishment. And for Dennis Prager, this line where he really broke trust with them, he started getting suspicious during COVID. But now that they've gone woke, he says there's a problem with this profession in this country. I don't disagree with him there at all. Let me be very clear. But here's what's interesting about where we draw these lines to me. And I'm trying to explain the mind of Mike Madison that's just weird. And it's like I've got a different functioning brain. Long before wokeness and COVID, pharma owned the medical system here. They owned the doctors. They owned the hospitals, most of them. They are pill pushers and drug dealers. Long before COVID and wokeness, our medical establishment here was medical treatment was the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States because of the profit model of this thing. Long before COVID and wokeness, and understand what I'm saying is, I think we wait too long. I think we give too much of the benefit of the doubt. When things are going wrong, you know, to me, the medical profession and doctors, they're held in such high esteem. Maybe just we just really felt like they were unassailable. They must know so much more than us because they've been to school and they wear their white coat and they've got that stethoscope. It's very intimidating and impressive. But long before COVID and wokeness, we were seeing rapid rises in all kinds of diseases and chronic conditions. We were becoming less and less healthy over the course of decades with this medical establishment in place, long before they became woke, long before they lost their mind over COVID. And long before COVID, long before wokeness in the medical schools. And so my question is, why did we view this profession, this machine? You'll hear a lot of conservatives and Democrats, too. You'll hear a lot of people say, we've got the best medical system in the history of the world. I disagree with that. I think it could be. But there's no money in health. But think about this for a second, because this is what one of the things, as I started to explore natural health and realized I was not being served by medical treatments, I was being served by good nutrition. And I started looking at, you know, at the system itself, long before COVID and wokeness. The number is somewhere around between 300,000 and 400,000 people per year are killed by either, number one, medical mistakes, and number two, properly prescribed medications. Now, what profession, what other possible profession can you imagine that kills? Let's just use a conservative number, 300,000 people a year. Now, I'm not talking about the fact that they have to deal with people who are really sick. Of course, people are going to die in hospitals. People are going to die under doctor's care. They get sick, a doctor engages them with this sickness, and they can't save them. Their health is too far gone. I'm not talking about people who die in medical care. I'm talking about mistakes and the side effects and consequences from properly prescribed, properly taken chemical pharmaceuticals. 300,000 people a year die from just the mistakes and the drugs. What profession? Can you name another one another profession that is routinely year in and year out on an annual basis responsible for the death of 300,000 Americans. Needless deaths, unnecessary deaths, deaths not caused by accident or disease, but are created because of the mistakes of the medical system. What other profession gets away with killing 300,000 people a year? And this was happening long before COVID and long before the wokeness. And the thing to me about it, too, and again, there's some great doctors out there, and I know some of them and love some of them. Some of them are my best friends. And I do believe they are some of the good ones. But the system, I'm challenging the system. What system that kills 300,000 people a year is held in high esteem, heralded as somehow above reproach? I just found that very weird. The wokeness, that's something. But, you know, the medical profession is even cocky. Their record is abysmal. 300,000 deaths a year. And I think I'm being conservative. I want to say it's closer to four. But let's just go with three so I'm not exaggerating here. What profession is not only still heralded, not only still recognized for their authority, still revered after killing 300,000 people a year, but they're cocky about it? You don't dare question them. How dare you do your own research into your own health? How dare you question us on the mask? How dare you question us? And right now, we've got a medical establishment that is experimenting on people. They've been experimenting on kids, as I laid out pretty extensively yesterday, with ADHD medications, antidepressants, all kinds of drugs. We've got kids, we've got toddlers on antipsychotics right now. Tens of thousands of them. And so I'm with Dennis Prager. This wokeness stuff is just insane. But is this what it took to get people to go, hey, our medical system, there's some real problems there? It wasn't the 300,000 people per year. I should have done my math on how many jumbo jets crashing into the ground that is a year. It's probably, what would that be? 300,000 people. They're talking 1,000 a day. It's like, you know, it's like four jumbo jets crashing into the ground every single day, killing everybody on board. How many people do you think would be getting on a plane? So I'm with him. The wokeness stuff is ridiculous. It has no place in medicine. It's invading everything from the American Medical Association to state boards of licensure, who have turned full-on authoritarian over the past 2 years. These are the people responsible for certifying a doctor that you can go see. You can imagine this trend is not our friend. But I got to tell you, I kind of drew my line at seeing our population getting sicker and sicker long before the wokeness and the COVID. I kind of drew the line at 300,000 needless deaths. I kind of drew the line at the huge bankruptcies, the cost of the medical system. I kind of drew the line at the generations of our kids actually being sicker than they were, than their parents were. So they fell out of disfavor for me a long time ago. The wokeness is, it's to me, it's almost just the cherry on top of the cake. Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm tough on the medical establishment, aren't I? You know, a lot of the bad health outcomes, if I can, I could defend them a tiny bit, not against those deaths. Put those deaths in perspective. We've got a war on drugs that has locked up millions of Americans. Illegal drugs are responsible for, I think, 30,000 deaths a year. Medical establishment kills 300,000. Seems like we need a war on the medical establishment if we're really concerned about saving lives. Anyway, I don't know if I've got any doctors listening to the show. I know a couple, and I'd say I love them, and or work out with one. After I do shows like this, I'll meet him at the gym. Sometimes he listens, sometimes he doesn't. I always kind of grimace. I'm like, I wonder if he heard that. He's a good doctor, spends a lot of his time trying to get people off medications, does good work with hospice patients and stuff like that. There's some beautiful people in medicine. I wish that they would speak up. I wish they would speak up and redirect this medical system. And in no way is that more important than when it comes to what we have seen around this air quotes in the studio, vaccination program. Here's some interesting statistics here. One of these things, there was a piece published in the New England Journal of Medicine. No rag, right? When it comes to the medical establishment, this is one of their bibbles. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that people vaccinated against COVID-19 remained contagious with the virus for a longer period of time than their unvaccinated counterparts. This is a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine showing that vaccinated people are more contagious for longer periods of time than unvaccinated people. Findings were published in a letter to the editor signed by dozens of doctors. There's some of those bright, shining stars of our medical field right there. From a variety of hospitals in Boston, Massachusetts, in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine in June. From July 2021 through January 2022, researchers studied 66 participants who contracted COVID-19, including 32 people with the Delta variant, 34 with the Omicron variant, Omicron. Researchers compared a variety of graphs tracking how long people remain contagious with the virus using both PCR tests and viral cultures as indicators. When the data was separated into categories unvaccinated, vaccinated, and boosted, individuals who did not receive a COVID-19 vaccine were contagious for a shorter period of time. Wrong, wronger, and wrongest. If that's not enough for you, that's not enough for you. As I say, you always have to go overseas. You got to cross some kind of an ocean to get good statistics. I don't know if we're seeing anything good coming from Canada. I mean, they certainly have gone whole hog, authoritarian, got to get the shot, got to get the jab. You can't even go. I've got relatives in Canada. Canada's a beautiful place. If you've not been to Canada, if they ever regain their sanity, I recommend a trip. It is truly a beautiful country. I spent most of my time in eastern Canada, beautiful there as well, and I've loved the weather. I've not been to western Canada, but I hear beautiful things about it too. So Canada's just such a great place. It's like California. Just such a beautiful place with so much promise and so many great things going for it, ruined by their political class. But to go across the ocean to get some real statistics, we've got to go to Great Britain and this one here. These are COVID-19 deaths by vaccination status in England. Now, remember, what's the last line that we have right now? Where have the goalposts been moved on the COVID shots? They've moved it from... You get the shot, you don't get infected. That's it. You're safe. You can get it and you can spread it, but you're still going to have better health outcomes. To where now we are, look, things seems to be pretty worthless, except it will save you from hospitalizations and death, right? Pandemic of the unvaccinated, hospitals loaded with the unvaccinated. We've heard all these stories. This is their last line, I think. Where could you go if we finally debunk the idea that these shots save you from hospitalizations and death? What else could they possibly cling to? This may be their last gasp. I'm not sure. This won't be reported here in the United States. So we do it here at WYAB, and I'm going to do my part here. COVID-19 deaths by vaccination status in England. This is from the 1st of April to the end of May, so a two-month period of time. This is from the Office of National Statistics in the UK. Okay? This is COVID deaths by vaccination status. Of the unvaccinated during this two-month period of time, we lost 288 souls. Those unvaccinated, those unwise people, why wouldn't they get the shot? These 288 moms and dads, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters would still be among us if they had just gotten the shot. Okay, so there's 288 we lost unvaccinated during this two-month period in England. What are the numbers on the vaccinated? 4,647. That appears to me, public school math, I'm just going to do a quick one. It's around 20 times. 20 times the number of vaccinated people died than unvaccinated. But wait, there's more. That's just of the two-shot vaccinated. Of the three-shot vaccinated, 4,215. So we've got 288 people dead, unvaccinated, in Great Britain over a two-month period of time, April through May of this year. 288 unvaccinated versus 4,647 vaccinated and 4,215 boosted, triple vaccinated. And as I say, I don't know what the next line in the sand, I don't know what the final grasping at straws can be around this vaccination program. There may be, it's almost like the Federal Reserve. You know, I really kind of saw Endgame back in 2011, 2012, and then they started pulling out these things I'd never imagined a prosperous country like the United States would ever do. I mean, they did third world banana republic stuff, printing up money to loan to the federal government, monetizing, or there's all kinds of things I just couldn't have seen coming. It was just beyond me that they would even try something like that in a country like the United States. I didn't think we'd put up with it. I didn't think it was feasible. It's not legal. You know, there's all kinds of things wrong with it. So I couldn't even in my mind make the reach that they would do the bizarre things they've done to our financial system like they've done since 2012. And so there's equally, I realize I've probably got a huge blind spot as to what the medical establishment will do now in light of these numbers. Where do you go once the myth is busted that these shots save you from hospitalizations and deaths? What's left? I have a feeling we're going to find out. Because these kinds of statistics are not only happening in England, they're happening in Germany, they're happening in Israel, they're happening in Australia, they're happening everywhere. Everywhere around us, swirling across the world, somehow the American medical establishment tells you, oh no, that's not really happening. And as I told you earlier in the show today, we are juggling some huge lies. I mean, some really, really big lies. This is among one of the biggest ones, that you still need to take the shots. You still need to get the boosters. You need to get that fourth booster. You need to get your toddler the shot because it will save you from really bad incomes. England says differently. The number of vaccinated and triple vaccinated, 20 times the death rate of the vaccinated. I'll be right back. Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment for the day today. I think we've given Americans Prosperity the day off. They must be busy up there. I told them, you know, do your thing up there. If you got a few minutes, give a call in. If not, don't worry about it. We'll have them back next Thursday. Americans for Prosperity, you can check them out. Go to Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook, I think is where they do most of their engagement. That leaves me out, us non-social media people, but I believe you can find everything there that you need to know. And this is a good group to get involved with. I believe we are going to be facing times where it's going to be very incumbent upon us to try to create a system here in Mississippi. We're going to have to think of some creative things to do. We're going to have to really slash the size of our government, slash spending, free businesses, attract businesses. It's going to be every man for himself in this country. The federal government is insolvent. And Mississippi, unfortunately, with our super majority red state here, we've elected, I guess, terrible people. No offense, I've met some of them. Seem like nice guys. There are a few guys in the Freedom Caucus that would go up there and fight the good fight, but they're a very small group. We've elected a bunch of people who go there for power and profit, like every other elected office out there. And we are tethered to this federal government. We are welfare queens. All of you staunch Republicans out there who vote for these people to go to the Mississippi legislature, we're all welfare queens. I have had the ability, where I lived, to have been able to vote for Representative Joel Baumgart, who votes against all of this spending and understands that we are a welfare state, and he has proposed policies against it. He gets basically nowhere, and he is now retiring. He's setting up his own libertarian country, essentially. I need to have Joel on if he'll come on and talk about what they're doing down in Honduras. But Mississippi is going to be facing some headwinds. I don't know what happens. You know, Mississippi is responsible for a chunk of this inflation. states like Mississippi that are on the teat, where the government has to print up money and send it down here just so we can survive in a supermajority red state. Doesn't that sound seem kind of weird? Seems like, you know, the Republicans sell us on self-reliance and, you know, lifting yourself up by your bootstraps and working hard and making it on your own. Isn't that kind of the Republican mantra? Back when I was a Kool-Aid drinking Republican, that seemed to kind of be what they talked about. And yet they are perfectly happy in the state house here in Mississippi, just sitting back and waiting for those checks to flow in from Uncle Sam. Well, I think there may be a point where Uncle Sam's checks bounce. If they don't bounce, it means they're continuing to print up money, and inflation is just going to continue to rage in this country. And it's going to get worse. Worse, not better. The good thing about a recession, people say I'm negative. I always see the silver lining. The good thing about a recession is you may see inflation come down a tad bit. You may see gas prices come down when businesses aren't running trucks, when people don't have to go to work because they lost their jobs. Well, it's a lot less demand on oil and gas, and gas prices will come down. See? I'm always looking for the positives there. So in a true recession, in a deep, dark recession, at first, you may see prices come down a little bit. The problem is, just like COVID, it's not the situation, it's the reaction to the situation that makes it, at the government level, always makes it markedly worse. As the recession deepens, the federal government, this means Republicans and Democrats, they will respond by anyone printing more money. I would imagine, I suspect, maybe this will excite some people, particularly those of you without any children who have no care for the future of this country. You just want to get yours now before while the getting's good. I'm almost sympathetic to that at this point. Just try to get whatever you can out of this government while you can, because God knows they're putting the screws to you. The government's created this inflation. If they're going to send you out a few bucks, the problem is that once that money goes out, it creates more anyone inflation. And the Republicans and the Democrats, what I was starting to say was, I believe we'll probably see some stimmy checks go out. Gavin Newsom's already either proposed it or implemented it out in California. I think it's like $1,000 inflation check. You know what that's going to do in California? Increase inflation. People struggling to afford daycare. What do you think the daycare providers do when they go, hey, look at that, all of our parents just got an extra $2,000, one for the mom, one for the dad. They can afford maybe a slight, if we're going to raise prices here at the daycare, now's the time to do it. Well, they got this new $2,000 that just came in. They can't tell us they don't have the money. We know they got the money. This actually will create more inflation. So there'll be this little dip, possibly a deflationary dip, and it could be. I've been watching people trying to understand it myself, to exactly how deep the deflation could be before the inflation really kicks off, because they will attack deflation. You know, the Federal Reserve, the thing they hate the most, what they say they're always fighting, is deflation. They're so scared of deflation. Let me just tell you, you know what they're scared of? They're scared that you'll be able to afford more with your money. They're very just hopelessly scared that possibly things in your life could cost less. Now, there are situations where deflation can be very damaging to certain industries, can hurt people. But overall, the Federal Reserve's stated purpose is to keep prices rising. You know, they say they target 2% a year. And this is one of the great mysteries to the Mike Madison Show here, is how do you have a bunch of people at the top of this economic food chain telling you every year to your face, hey, we're trying to erode the purchasing value of your dollar by 2% a year. Over the course of 10 years, we want to see your dollar shrink by 20%. They tell you that to your face, and people go, oh, wow, they're really in charge. It's good to have them there. They're telling you straight to your face. They want to create inflation. They hate deflation because that affects things like tax receipts. If things cost less, then sales taxes cost less, then employers don't have to pay as much, which actually keeps prices down because they don't have to pay high labor costs. But then your submittance, your remittance to the federal government in terms of income taxes goes down. So the Federal Reserve, because they're running this inflationary debt-based Ponzi scheme, they need inflation. So when deflation does arrive, because we're in a recession, it happens every time, they're going to start printing up money to get that deflation to go away. Those pesky lower prices. Americans are finally going to feel a little bit of relief. Those of you who still have jobs. They're going to feel a little bit of relief. And if you don't have a job, wouldn't it be better to have lower prices? If you just got enough savings to last for 3 months, wouldn't it be great if that savings just prices went down? You got a 4 month cushion. Well, the Federal Reserve and our government's not going to allow that to happen because they're concerned about what? Themselves. They want to make sure that tax revenues are high. They've made a lot of promises to Lockheed Martin. Has anybody noticed that CBS News here at the radio station? Now, we are trapped in this contract with CBS News. Not a host here, not the station owner. None of us are happy about it. We're trapped in this thing. We just didn't really realize. I mean, there's just no good options out there for a news break. And it's important to kind of hear headline stuff. I think it adds some. It gets up some. To me, some days it gives me things to talk about because they're so drastically wrong. But I don't know if you've noticed. Listen carefully coming up. CBS news breaks, and not every single one of them, but they're actually Lockheed Martin is advertising the F-35 on the CBS News. Anybody notice that? You'll hear it. You'll hear it from time to time. Now, what in the world does Lockheed Martin need to advertise the F-35 to the American people for? Well, they don't. Obviously, I mean, I'm a libertarian. I believe we should all be able to own whatever arms the government can own. So if somebody wants to buy an F-35, it'd make me feel pretty good to know some patriots had F-35s out there right about now. I think we might need an Air Force before long. But the reason that they do that is because they want to make sure they're getting money to CBS to carry water for the defense industries and endless wars and things like that. That's the payoff. So when you hear the Lockheed Martin F-35 ads, you understand that's the payola. That's the bribe to CBS. Hey, we're going to float some money your way. Make sure that you support every war. Make sure you demonize Russia, demonize China, demonize Iran, demonize North Korea, demonize Venezuela. Make sure you're with us on everything. We got to keep this war machine going. Here's a little something, something for your efforts. That's how they buy the media. So just check that out. The Republicans are part and parcel of that, and the Democrats now are huge warmongers, so they're all on board with that. Anyway, that's about all the time I've got today. Interesting time to be alive, isn't it? Well, interesting now, interestinger coming up soon. We'll talk about it as it happens. That's all the time I got. I'll see you tomorrow.
No Bye-bye. Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.